This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back to the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, live at the Beacon Building. You are listening to The Pulse. You can stream us live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com, and it is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And anytime during the show, you can give us a call as well, 866-823-1077. Let's continue our Healthy Monday. We have a brand new segment. We had him on about a month and a half or so ago. And Randy Clemens, the author of Sriracha Cookbook. That's how we found him, because we love hot stuff.
We
so
do,
much.
And I think actually you, after just moving here, Randy, ran into somebody that works
Tracy.
With us. Yeah, one of the account executives, and somehow she got word back to us that you were in town, and so we looked you up, and we got the books, and then we had you on, and we thought, yeah, this guy has a kind of a different take on healthy eating.
Well, thanks for having me, and yeah, it was rather strange. Thank you. I think the second day I lived here, moved from Los Angeles. And second day I lived here, I went to the Bikram Yoga Studio, and I was strangely early, but it's because I got the time wrong, so I was an hour early. And yeah, Tracy came in, was selling ads. Are you guys still taking people buying ads?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. And I listened to that with a little smile on my face, and as soon as she was done talking, I said, well, are you looking for local cookbook authors to come in? And she took my information, and yeah, a few weeks later, sat down with you, and now I'm back. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you. You were away for part of the summer, right? Were you back in L.A. or
I did my first cross country road trip, and I did a back and forth, so Manchester to L.A. and back after I'd moved. So I flew here to move, and then I did a cross country trip back to L.A. and then back to Manchester.
See, I would love to do a cross country vehicle trip, just without any particular time constraints.
Yeah.
So driving across the country, is it worth it, or is it more pain in the butt?
Oh, well, if you have that luxury of not needing to be anywhere at any time, it can be beautiful. If you're, creating a game out of it, of trying to be somewhere the fastest, or, still playing as if you're in traffic, you can have very little fun if you wanted to. But
what was your case?
I took my time.
By yourself?
For the trip to L.A., yes. So I drove kind of the quick and gritty route through Denver, just straight diagonal line as much as possible. And then picked up a friend of mine, actually the guy who gave me my first taste of sriracha. We've been friends since high school, and picked him up, and we went up to Yosemite, hiked Half Dome, and went up to Oregon, saw some family, and then did a real nice northern route back. Got to see some of the states I hadn't seen before: Wyoming, South Dakota, Montana. Just beautiful,
good for
stunning.
You.
Yeah, it was really nice, really nice.
Did part of the trip include any exploration of interesting food places? Did you do any of that kind of Googling on the way?
You know, I didn't do any planning whatsoever, as my friend will attest. We stopped a few nice places. There's a few spots in Oregon that I like to visit when I'm with my family. Southern Oregon, Central Oregon. There's a place called Heaven on Earth that's like just this strange place in the middle of Grants Pass, Oregon, that has cinnamon rolls the size of your head. And some really, really amazing, they're humongous. And they're smart enough to put a bunch of stuff out for free sampling while you're waiting for your table.
Of
and so
course.
There's plenty of people who come in not even to eat there, just to pick up a cinnamon roll or some of their Marionberry jam or their apple butter. It's a neat, weird place. They just have some really awful guitar music that's just loops. It's like four songs. If I worked there, I'd blow my brains out. they play it all the time, and people keep going for the food. The food's awesome. That was a great one. Stumbled across a international multicultural fair in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and that was like a once a year thing. And we happened to be there at the right time, right place. And they had a farmer's market there as well, and picked up some. That was actually nice. We weren't eating from a Starbucks or something else for once. It was like, oh, we can get some produce and eat like apples and. We felt a little better.
Did you go camping? Was it camping, or did you stay in hotels, or?
No, I did. So Yosemite, we camped and stayed with my family, but no, there was a lot of, sleeping in the car, and we did stay in a hotel, I think twice, two nights. It was kind of like, yeah, let's maybe shower. So, but we had the AC cranking the whole time, so we weren't stinking too bad. So, yeah, but it was really great. I'm I did get some New York pizza for my buddy. He'd never been through New York, so we didn't go to New York City proper, but we were, I think, in Albany and actually found a really good place. I'll try to think of the name at break or something, but it was really good pizza. So
yeah, there's enough people that probably have moved up from the city to upstate New York in the Capital District that brought some of those great Sicilian deep dish type pizzas
with
them.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, and my friend was very, very pleased. So he was happy with his decision to get New York pizza.
Right. Now here's a guy. Now, you're vegetarian, correct?
Correct.
And maybe we'll have you give the definitions and the degrees of difference with that and vegan and all that stuff.
And paleo.
Right. So, but I can tell because he has a tattoo of a bundle of asparagus on his arm.
His tattoos are awesome.
I don't believe I've ever seen anybody. And then is that an artichoke on the inside?
Artichoke, garlic, salt. Avocado, chili peppers, Parmigiano Reggiano.
He has a walking produce department.
It is so cool. I saw that the last time he was here.
Oh,
we were talking about it. I think it's really awesome.
Well, I mean, he walks the walk and talks the talk. And all right, so vegetarian means you'll eat nothing that had any kind of a meat source.
Nothing with the face is what a lot of people say.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the quick and quick way of saying it. But I don't eat meat. And
so not fish too. Right?
I also don't eat fish. So there are plenty of people who. Like to still eat fish, and they go by pescatarians a lot of times. So they won't eat beef or pork or chicken, but they eat seafood. I kind of came to a personal decision a little over five years ago after reading a book, and completely unexpected. Just by the end of the first chapter, it's called Eating Animals, and I knew my mind was made up. I was on my first trip to Asia, and I was. On the plane about to go to Vietnam with my friend that gave me my first taste of sriracha. I was about to go to Thailand for the first time to visit the town of Sriracha and then to Korea to visit a friend who'd been teaching English there. So I was making a big trip out of it. And here I am on the plane there deciding I wasn't going to eat meat anymore. So I did the last hurrah in those countries. I overdid meat in those. Like, as a matter of fact, a few days before leaving Korea, I felt so just sluggish from overdoing and not just meat, just going, you know, really hard every night. Just going out and trying to see everything in a month and trying to eat everything and drink everything, try everything. And so by the end, I was just, I want a salad. So actually in Korea, which was the end of my trip, we went everywhere but Seoul. We went to all these other cities, and like the last stop was supposed to be Seoul. And I was just so tired. And my friend was relieved, actually, because she was vegetarian, but she kind of relaxed her rules because she hadn't really gotten to try the Korean barbecue and all those things while she was there. Because I was eating them, she was, you know, trying some too. But yeah. By the end of the trip, we were ready for some fresh greens and some water.
All right, so what is a vegan now? Is that kind of a grayer area? Or?
So vegan has kind of gotten there's a joke. How do you know if someone's vegan? They'll tell you.
Oh.
And it's so there's no meat. There's no animal products. They vegan typically means you're not going to have any dairy. You're not going to have any eggs. No meat certainly. And even if like hardcore vegans, hardcore, no honey. So that one never really struck me, even when I was adhering to a more vegan diet more regularly and more strictly. Still, raw local honey, if beekeepers are doing it in a responsible enough way where the bees are keeping plenty of their honey. It's not, I don't feel it's stealing from the animal. And I had someone tell me that meant I was a vegan.
And
I made the face I think every listener just made. I told them never to say that word ever again. It's just cutting too many hairs. You know, just eat, enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not enjoying your food, I don't know what the point is. And that's the beauty of it for me is I switched to vegetarian and I love vegetables. So I never feel wanting. I really don't. But it wasn't a flavor thing. I didn't stop eating meat because it didn't taste good. It tastes delicious. And I've had a few little bites.
You're falling off the wagon.
No, I've had a few little bites on purpose. And I've had several, far too many to count by accident. But, you know, it just happens. And there's no sense beating yourself up over, you know, choices personal or purposeful or accidental. You know, it just...
All right, so how much healthier are you, do you think, as a result? Is there any, like, quantitative, you know, numbers, blood panels that you've had to compare?
Well, I don't go to doctors very often. I haven't been probably in a long time. I can't even remember. But I'm 65 pounds lighter. And it's not just because of the diet change. I mean, I'm finding more and more of it because I'm finally getting back into losing weight after plateauing for way too long, which is frustrating beyond belief. But it's more so, I think, just about I've really come to find that your mental state of being has so much to do with it. And for a long time, I think I discounted exercise or eating well. And those, you have to have those two things. And it doesn't have to be crazy exercise, you know, just being active. But really, stress reduction for me was a big thing. And just kind of having that mindset that, you know, I am eating I'm eating something nutritive, or I'm eating something healthy, something good for me. I'm doing the best I can, you know, even if you have some strange circumstances where you're not eating, you know, you're not eating as well as you should be, you know, quote unquote. I think it really has a lot to do with how you feel about what you're eating and how you feel about what you're doing in your life. If you know that you're sneaking too many treats, I really think that your body processes it differently. And I don't have any, you know, scientific data to point at that, but I've just noticed that your mood kind of can magnify things. And so if you're feeling down on yourself or down about what you're doing, you're going to digest your food with that kind of asterisk. I don't know, maybe, but to me, and since moving here, since moving from Los Angeles to New Hampshire, I've had quite a bit of stress reduction, and I feel strong and healthy just simply being here, honestly. But compassion is another big thing that I've gotten out of it, which was unexpected. Not that I wasn't compassionate before, but that's what got me in the book, was just the ethical part of it. And it's a personal choice. I'm not someone told me, thank you for not being a tofu Nazi. And so with that joke about being, you know, how do you know if someone's a vegan? They'll tell you, I try not to be that, you know, overbearing. And, you know, people will notice, my friends, you know, if they didn't already know, when we're out a couple times, oh, you don't eat meat. And they might ask. If they do, I'm happy to share my reasons for it. But, it's a very personal decision, I think, people, you know, should make. And, I only made it after looking into what actually went into factory farm meat production and eggs and eggs, dairy. They're pretty deplorable practices, and I just I don't want any blood on my hands. You know, I like people, I like animals, I like so it was just something I wanted to remove for myself. And you know, if anything, I do inspire someone to do that for one meal or a week or a year or whatever. You know, I'm thrilled. And so I said I wasn't going to come on and put my books a million times, but so my Veggie Lovers Sriracha Cookbook that I came out with after becoming vegetarian, that title was not by mistake. My publisher really wanted it to be the Vegan Sriracha Cookbook, and it's a really exclusive, it can be an exclusionary word, I think. There's a very small percentage, they say, like they're estimating 3% of Americans are vegetarian, and less than 1% are vegan. And to me, that just screamed like, hey, if you're not vegan, you're not going to like this. And that's, I'm not vegan, and I like vegetables. And so I was like, Veggie Lovers, Veggie Lovers, Veggie Lovers. And I fought with my publisher to get that. And I'm very happy with the result, because I think it opens a lot more people's minds to the idea of, oh, I don't. And, you know, if you want to put a chicken breast on any of those dishes, you can. that's the idea. You know, here's a way to make a vegetable be the center stage if you wanted to. So that's kind of just what my cooking's become. You can be a very unhealthy fat vegan if you wanted to. Potato chips are vegan. I mean, you can do it. Oreos are vegan. PETA has PETA has a whole list of like
ways to cheat.
Foods you wouldn't think were vegan but are, and like Oreos is. I've talked to a couple people where they're like, I wish I'd never found out those were vegan.
Oh my. You know, that's so true. When you, well, it's like overindulging.
Sugar and fat. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you're not using dairy, if you're not using butter. Any coconut oil. I mean, I like coconut oil. I think it's a very healthy fat. But any sort of hydrogenated vegetable oil and sugar combination and flour, I mean, it's vegan. Vegan does not mean healthy. Vegetarian does not mean healthy, right. You know, and just in the same way that, you know, paleo doesn't necessarily, you know, carnivore doesn't necessarily mean healthy. There's a balance to be found. I think it's individual.
Let's define paleo as well, because we did mention that. So we defined vegan and vegetarian. So paleo.
Taking callers now for
Drifter.
I'm not 100% sure. My understanding of it is that you're attempting to recreate a diet that was more typical when we were
cavemen.
Yeah. Right. So lots of meat, which is why I haven't looked into it. But I wish I knew more about paleo, but I haven't looked into it much. I know there's a lot of grain avoidance, and just there's very little processed food, which I think is great. You know, that's something I try to adhere to as best I can. You know, I take some grocery store shortcuts, but I try to keep ingredients in the house, not things with ingredient lists. That's a kind of a good starter for me, but at the same time, it takes a lot more time to cook that way. And I'm letting in a few more shortcuts that I still feel good about. More and more packaged products, I think, are coming out with that same mentality of understanding people don't want to see an ingredient list that's 50 ingredients long with things you can't pronounce.
Yeah. So, you moved here partly or maybe completely for you like the political atmosphere in the state of New Hampshire and the potential that holds. But I'm wondering, as far as food goes, are you getting everything you need? Because this is not L.A. So how difficult is it on you to not be able to find all the things you would like easily?
Well, I've been really surprised for a number of reasons. So, yeah, there have been some items that, you know, I'm not able to find immediately locally. But, hey, thanks, Amazon. but, right. You know, there's also, I mean, many of the things that I would be looking for, maybe they're not in Manchester yet, but A Market has some pretty awesome exotic stuff. And the Whole Foods down in Nashua, it's a half an hour away. But that's 5 miles in L.A. traffic. So 30 minutes true. With no traffic is like a treat for me. So I don't mind the drive down to Nash at all. And I was really surprised.
Nash.
Yeah, Nash.
I never heard that.
Well,
of you?
I'm starting it right
that
now.
Is so
this
funny.
LA is coming in
I
and taking
it.
Over and shortening
he's a,
everything.
He's a hipster. Here we go.
I love it.
Market Basket, actually.
Market Basket does
yeah,
have a lot of
they
unique,
have a ton of stuff.
Exotic things. You're right.
And I mean, so if Sriracha, there's a brand called Shark Brand from Thailand that I used to have to drive an hour and 15 minutes to get in LA, and mm-hmm. it was out, I mean, with traffic and distance, it was far from me, but it's, or I'd overpay for it from Amazon. And here it is 5 minutes from where I live at Market Basket. It's not common. It is not common. And I was blown away to see it there. And then going over to the produce section, there was like an entire aisle of these root vegetables that I've never seen or heard of. And
yeah.
There's some times where I go into a store and see one produce item I haven't seen, but this was like a row of all these crazy, like, you know, just these different tubers that I want to learn why they're different, and I want to learn how to make all of them. So
yeah, I think there's a sizable Asian and African population in the inner city of Manchester, and those people are being served, thank goodness. I'm glad that Market Basket is responding to that group, make them feel, you know, included.
Yeah, and also there's a bunch of these little markets that I haven't. There's a little Nepalese market I saw the other day, and I haven't gone in yet, but I'm gonna. I'm
there's
thrilled.
A ton of those all around the city. There really is, tucked away in different, you know, places that you wouldn't think, you know, they were there. But
yeah, I'm thrilled, and I think I'm just gonna stand by those root vegetables next time and wait till someone comes and buys them.
Ask them, right?
Yeah, and ask them. Well, someone it happened to me when I was in culinary school 12 years ago, and it was right around Thanksgiving, and I like ran in to get a bunch of stuff in a hurry, and cute girl comes over. I'm in my chef's coat, and she goes, "Can I ask you a question?" I was like, "Absolutely." "How do you cook a turkey?" And I was like, "I should start wearing my chef's coat into the market more often."
So, is that a chick magnet like puppies? And
it only worked that one time.
Oh, okay. But
no! Remember when Chef Patrick says he goes to the grocery store and he's in his chef coat? People are always asking him questions.
I should try it again. I mean, that was 12 years ago. So maybe now, maybe I'll try it again.
Try it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, final question. You're here in New Hampshire from California. You say you're more relaxed. Is that the environment here, or is that a mindset change on your part?
Yes.
Okay.
Both definitely, yeah.
Right.
So there's seasons here, obviously, as you guys know. I'm looking forward to them, famous last words. I know. But at the same time, I felt very divorced from the seasons in Los Angeles, and with that comes not slowing down ever. I just did a trip in January to Europe, which was incredible, and got a really good deal because it was off-season. But it was really great to witness it because, you know, the world didn't fall apart. Like, people were out enjoying themselves. It was cold, but you could dress warm. And so anyway, I got to really witness a much slower change of pace that was much more enjoyable to me. And certainly, you know, having that winter looking forward to spring and spring looking forward to summer, and it keeps more of a balance versus just kind of hurrying to be outside in the sun on the beach all the time. Like, it's great. It's a terrible thing to complain about, but it's just there was no downtime. And so I'm enjoying just taking things a little slower here, and by virtue of it not being quite so spread out, I mean, I just moved from L.A. and I lived in between two families for 2 years, and I talked to one of them a few times. I've already been in one of my neighbors' homes and I've been talking with many more people. So there's just much more of a sense of community built in here. It's almost overwhelming for a city guy to like be so welcomed in. I have a very small family, and so to come into this community, just that's the one that exists here in New Hampshire, and the political aspect at the Free State Project that I'd moved here for. There's just been an amazing sense of community, of people. So, and the greatest expression of that to me is food. And so I hope to contribute to that, but also, you know, continue to see what else is out there. I think it's a really great way to bridge gaps and show people what your history is.
All right, if somebody wants to be in touch with you, you are a chef, you're also an author and a thinker, I would say. What would be the best way? Would they go to your website or go ahead and have a slug of water?
Well, randyclemens.com. It's my name, nice and clever.
C-L-E-M-E-N-S.
Yeah.
Different ways to spell it.
And I don't know, 5 years ago, I didn't know what I was going to be into for the rest of my life, so I was like, well, I'll just get my name. And I'm glad I did, because I'm not into what I was in 5 years ago, so it's just, it'll keep evolving as I do. So no promises, but I think you'll enjoy what you find there.
All right, I would agree. Come back in 2 weeks again?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be here.
All right, terrific.
Sounds Thanks for having
great.
Me again.
You're welcome.
Very interesting. Very, you know, I like how you speak.
Thank you. I think about food a lot, so, and I've had a lot of time to think about it. I've been cooking since I was 12 or 13, so.
A healthy foodie.
Cool. A great different voice,
yes,
type of voice.
Different take.
On
you
the
know,
show,
definitely.
Which is good.
Exactly.
Okay,
perfect.
Cool.
You're
thanks.
Listening to Food for Thought, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. It is Healthy Monday. We just got a different take on healthy with Randy Clemens, the Sriracha cookbook author, and talked a little bit about vegan and vegetarian, a little bit on paleo. And
yeah, I was a little unclear on all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I kind of knew it, but I guess I wasn't thinking that vegan is even a bit more restrictive than being a vegetarian.
A lot more strict.
Something I'd never really considered, so I should have paid closer attention. So I'm glad that he could give us a little tutorial on defining those different terms.
My son Tyler was vegan for probably 3+ years. Strict vegan.
Was he?
He lost 100 pounds.
It does seem like a good weight loser,
pounds.
But as Randy pointed out, there are unhealthy versions of all these ways to live.
Yes, there is. Tyler now reads every label, knows everything that goes into him. He's not vegan anymore. He's dairy free.
Okay.
So now
is that for health purposes or just
health
philosophical?
Purposes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, so. It's good that he can make it.
Feels
he looks
better.
He looks healthy. And he lost 100 pounds.
100 pounds.
Wow.
Yep.
Over what period of time?
Not very long. It was when he was out in L.A. for a little bit. And he lived like right near a farmer's market. And his roommate was into it and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
Well, I have run across something that's kind of interesting. Much of this is really bad food, but it's called food fails. Now, these are products that you may or may not have heard of that for one reason or another just never continued or never succeeded. So let me roll with that, and we're waiting on Susan Osborne. And so when she arrives, we will just pick up with her.
Sounds good.
But this is something that's kind of fun. Here are products that failed over the last, say, 100 years. And this one from 1918, coffee-flavored Jell-O.
Ooh, think about it.
Yeah, I know.
Ooh.
Well, the thinking then was that people like to have their coffee in the morning, and they also like to sometimes have something sweet. So if you combined the two, or they like to have dessert, so if you combine the two, it might satisfy the need.
Actually, before you continue, are you a Jell-O person?
No.
You like Jell-O?
No.
Neither.
I mean, I have it once in a while, but typically, yeah, okay, if it's got some whipped cream on it, then we can talk.
Right. I agree. I totally, thoroughly agree with that.
Now, in 1918, the makers of Jell-O introduced coffee Jell-O. The only big problem, cola-flavored Jell-O was sold for about a year as well, and that didn't do too well. And for a brief while, the Clear Wiggly dessert was sold in celery and chocolate flavors as well. So they've been messing around, but I mean the basics are still there. You know, pineapple, strawberry, blueberry, lemon, lime, and a couple other ones. But the coffee Jell-O didn't happen.
Yeah,
100 years ago. Here's one: people that make Ready Whip, you know, the aerosol whipped cream, tried Ready Bacon.
Get out. Ready bacon.
Well, they figured if you're cooking breakfast in the morning and you've got a hankering for bacon, why dirty up a pan that you'll only have to clean later? The solution? Foil-wrapped ready bacon you could pop into your toaster for piping hot pork in minutes. Again, this is before microwave ovens.
Okay.
Because now you can get microwave bacon.
Right.
But you would put it in foil. It was probably trimmed and everything else to fit.
Kind of like a Pop-Tart.
Sort of, but extremely messy and I would say very dangerous. Think of the grease fires.
Yikes.
Another food fail, something called Cereal Mates. Now, this is a lot more recent. In 1997, the idea was simple. A small box of cereal, a container of specially packaged milk, no refrigeration required, and a plastic spoon. On top of that, though, was the price. At about $1.50 for only 4 ounces of cereal and the milk, it was deemed too expensive for most consumers. Well, think about it. A big box of cereal is, what, $4? We're talking just a percentage of that for $1.50?
Yeah, forget it.
After 2 years, Kellogg's pulled it from the shelves.
Interesting.
Didn't work. You ever see those before?
I did. I do remember seeing those.
Here's another one. Flour-flavored Pez.
Oh,
the candies. See, that's exactly the reaction. You know, these things are not successful because they were just
flour
ill-conceived.
Flavored. What is flour?
Flour as in growing.
Okay.
Not King Arthur flour. This is flowers from your garden.
That's what I was thinking. I'm thinking, what? Okay.
Introduced in the late 60s. Think about it. The flour child era.
Right.
Flour-flavored Pez was designed to appeal to the hippie generation, complete with a groovy psychedelic dispenser.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, you know.
So they're selling it, you know, on that collectible basis, too.
And it didn't make it.
But even in the decade of free love, no love could be found for the flavor power of flour.
Oh, my gosh. That's cool.
Some of the Pez stuff, I mean, just amazing. Did I tell you when I was in Washington, D.C., I went into a souvenir shop at the Ford Theater, you know, which is where Lincoln was shot. And in the souvenir shop, they've got you know T-shirts and pictures and mementos. They actually have Lincoln Pez dispensers.
Oh my gosh!
And some of the other presidents from the 1800s.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, there's some people that are like Pez collectors.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They are really into them.
I would love to have one of those people on the air because, after all, it is food, sort of.
Well, you know what? Newfound Lake, and I cannot think of the name of the restaurant, but right behind, you know, when you get into Newfound Lake where the Catholic Church is, it's that restaurant that's up on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now a new owner, but the previous owners, two men, one of them is and you know, I do know of someone that knows them. He was an avid Pez collector, and in his bar, up at the top, all around the whole entire room, mm-hmm. he had this little ledge with a million, well, I'm exaggerating, a lot of different Pez, Pez things.
So you wonder if those were from his childhood or if he bought those,
lots
if he's a collector.
Old ones.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh. Yeah, lots of them.
Hmm.
So, yeah, no, that would be, you know, eccentric.
If you live in Hooksett, this is sort of along the same lines, and you go to the transfer station there, go inside one of the big, structures, the big metal structures where the trash is kind of scooped up by the, you know, the bulldozers and taken away. On the walls, lining it nonstop, Tonka toy trucks.
Cool.
These are
people that have dumped them.
People that have dumped them, or now people bring them, and then they go back and visit them. And the reason I know that is I did a story for New Hampshire Magazine about that a year ago, and I was shocked. Hundreds of them. Some of them worth some money.
I bet they. I was just going to say they must be worth something. That's kind of cool.
It started in the 1980s, late 80s, with somebody who just dropped one off, and somebody put it aside. And then after a while, that person just kept collecting them. They had to put them somewhere. So on the horizontal beams all around the building, it's nothing but Tonka trucks. And then there's like toy Winnebagos and all kinds of interesting heavy equipment toys.
So that's at the Hooksett Transfer Station.
The Hooksett Transfer Station. You got to live there to get in there, of course. But maybe you do, and maybe you know that already. I lived in Hooksett for several years, and I discovered that when I was moving. You know, it took me all that time. I was just bringing load after load of stuff to throw out, and I looked around. And I said, this is really cool. This is like a museum
like
to
a
Tonka.
Museum.
Yeah. So anyway, turn it into a magazine story. All right. So let's get back to food fails. And this is from a publication website called Mental Floss, which you may have heard of. A product called I Hate Peas. Want to guess what that was all about?
I hate peas. I hate peas, too.
Do you really?
I don't like peas.
Well, in the 1970s, since kids love French fries so much, the company decided that disguising peas in a fry-shaped form was a surefire way to trick kids into getting their vitamins.
Ooh, I don't know.
Did not work. Children all over America saw through the ruse and said, nah, not going to do it. So I Hate Peas was a food fail. Here's another one. Although I challenge whether or not this was a fail. Chicken dinner candy bar.
Ooh. Dinner candy bar. Well, you know, I would probably try that.
Well, a lot of people made it for 40 years. So I'm not sure why this made the list.
Does it say the name? Like what?
Well, the Sperry Candy Company, which introduced the treat in the 1920s, introduced the chocolate and peanut butter bar right before the onset of the Depression, and it has like a picture of a cooked chicken on the candy wrapper. They were hoping that the name would give consumers the feeling they were about to have a big home-cooked meal at grandma's house, hence the juicy roast chicken on the advertisements.
That is funny.
Strangely, the gimmick worked. Even well after the economy recovered, remember this was pre-Depression, and chicken dinner candy bars were available into the 1960s. Now, I was around then, and I do not remember that particular candy.
Interesting.
Perhaps some of our listeners
chicken dinner
may
candy
remember
bar.
That. Yeah. Pass. Number 7 on the list of the top 10 food fails, Hublin's Wine and Dine. Ever hear of that?
No.
This was from the mid-70s. In the mid-70s, Hublin introduced Wine and Dine, an upscale, easy-to-make dinner that included a small bottle of vino. Consumers knew Hublin for their liquor and wines, so how are they supposed to know that the wine included a wine and dine was an ingredient for pasta sauce? In other words, it was not table wine, it was cooking wine. Hasty consumers who didn't read the directions closely ended up pouring the contents of the bottle into a nice glass and getting a less than pleasant mouthful of salted wine. So again, people not paying attention were drinking the wine instead of cooking with it. And it was not a table wine.
Oh.
I know.
Yuck.
We're rounding down into the bottom three of the top 10 list of food fails. Something called funky fries. Now, this is a little bit more recent. This goes back to 2002.
Funky fries.
Funky
I'm intrigued.
Fries, hoping to follow the success of Heinz's new kitty ketchup versions in green and purple. Do you remember those?
Yes.
Orida produced funky fries, chocolate-flavored, cinnamon-flavored, and blue-colored French fries. Funky fries were pulled off the shelves in 2003.
Yeah, I don't remember those.
No,
but
no.
I do remember the ketchup like that. But yeah, no.
Yeah, are they still making the green and purple ketchup?
I think so.
No.
You know where they would have it if they do would be Fresh Market.
Oh,
Fresh
really?
Market in Bedford has funky things like that. Like things that go back and just that they
some
always
retro
have
fun- products.
They do have retro products.
You know, there's a website and I can't think of it now that actually sells all kinds of products from back in the day, 40s, 50s, 60s that you can't get now, and they've got everything.
Do you remember Quisp cereal?
I sure do.
They had it at Fresh Market.
I
actually bought a box
did
of it
you really?
Because I used to
did
like
you check
it.
Check the pull by date.
I'm telling you, Quisp cereal. Hmm. They had it at Fresh
it was
Market.
Quisp and Quake, right? Wasn't the other one Quake, like the partner?
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember Quisp, the blue box with the little alien thing, you know, guy.
Right, and, yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I bring up that website is because in Detroit, they make a ginger ale called Verner's, which is very gingery tasting. I mean, most ginger ales that you get anywhere are very pale tasting.
Right.
You would not really know that ginger should even be in the name.
Exactly.
But ginger ale is a deeper amber color, and it tastes like ginger. And it's really, really good. But you can't buy it. It's a regional produced beverage. So somebody at the other station I was at sent me a link to a website where you can order it.
You can buy it.
And you can buy all kinds of regional stuff. Maybe you moved here and there's other stuff from your childhood you want to get. So Maybe cool. I'll make a note to see if I can find that, because that's a worthwhile link for people, especially for gift giving.
Definitely.
Or just for yourself. All right, two more to go. This food fail, Pepsi AM.
Pepsi AM.
Creating a soup. See, the reason you don't remember half of these is because they didn't last very long.
Right.
Or they're before our time. So don't feel badly if these things don't ring a bell, because they're not supposed to. Creating a super caffeinated soda worked well for the makers of Red Bull, but not for the folks at Pepsi. With 25% more caffeine than a cup of Joe, PepsiCo introduced the cola-flavored product in 1989. Only to discover that most people just couldn't bring themselves to drink soda with their cornflakes.
I can see that.
Yeah, nah, not interested. I mean, some people, I mean, I worked with a guy at a station in Boston that every morning would have a 2-liter bottle of Dr. Pepper. He would just, over the course of our, you know, 4-hour radio show, he would go through at least one bottle.
That's bad.
And the former arena announcer for the Monarchs, Sean Sullivan, the guy would drink at least a couple 2-liter bottles of Mountain Dew every day. I know. And I mean, that's talk about that. There's more caffeine in that, I believe, than in the cola products.
I think it's so bad for you.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's off of it now, but all right. And finally, this one, the food fail at number 10 is something called Gerber Singles. For some reason, Gerber, you know, the baby food people, Gerber had to learn that the hard way. In 1974, the company released Gerber Singles, small servings of food meant for single adults, packaged in jars that were almost identical to those used for baby food. It didn't take long for Gerber execs to figure out that most customers, unless they were less than a year old, couldn't get used to eating a pureed meal out of a jar, particularly one depressingly labeled singles. just to rub it in, you're still
exactly.
single, and you're eating baby food. Loser. Baby food for grown-ups was pulled from the marketplace shortly after its birth. So there you go, Gerber Singles and 9 other food fails.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was that, you know, people will and there's probably 500 other examples that, you know, you could find somehow if you had no life and wanted to just poke around all day on the internet. But I'm going to make a note to try to find the website that has all those out of town products, the retro stuff, you know, candies, sodas, Twinkies and, you know, stuff like that. Maybe you can't get here that you could where you grew up because it was regional.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think we need to go on a break.
Okay.
We need to go on a break. You're listening to Food for Thought, Healthy Monday. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. I'm Mike Moore, and she is Carol Lawrence. And our sponsors, we love them, include Integrity Health Coaching Solutions of Bedford and Londonderry, and Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and Londonderry, Londonderry with the drive-through window. You know what we didn't do early on today, Carol, was the food holidays.
Yes. Well, you know, I was kind of staying away from it until
Rocco
was out of the house.
Oh, really?
Because it's not really very healthy. It is National French Fries Day.
You know what? If there's a bad food that you allow yourself once in a while, you really can't beat French fries.
I have to agree. That's probably one of my biggest downfalls is French fries. When I see French fries, and my dad makes homemade French fries.
Does he? Do you have a fry-later at
home? My dad has a fry-later built into his counter in his kitchen.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Pays to be a restaurant owner. You can get that stuff for your house.
Yes. So National French Fries Day. It's also Beans and Franks Day.
Beans and Franks. Yeah, once in a while, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love hot dogs. I just rarely have them.
Yeah.
Because I just know they're... That's horrible.
Bad.
But
very,
I mean,
very bad.
French fries, you know, sometime we should just open the phone lines. Who makes the best French fries? Because it'd be interesting to see what mom and pop places, what franchise places. Well, I mean, your dads are good. Of course, I'm going to guess he hand cuts them all, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does he leave the skins on?
Yep, on the ends. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. You know who else has really good homemade French fries is Five Guys.
Oh,
their fries.
You get it in a brown
bag,
right?
Those are delicious.
To help sop up the grease. But, you know, they are really good.
Once in a while, you know?
Once in a while, you got
it. All in moderation.
We talked about Wendy's the other day while I went there Saturday.
Did you?
And in your honor, I had a spicy chicken
did
sandwich.
Did you? You should have sent me a picture.
Oh, well.
My gosh. Yum. Oh, my gosh.
And it actually inspired what's going to be next week's a column in the Nashua Telegraph.
There you go.
So you never know where inspiration will come from.
Saturday night, we went to go eat at Canoe.
Oh, okay.
And I am not a very big, I'm not like a big beef eater. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, right. I'll steal a couple bites of Daryl. Daryl's a major meat and potato guy.
Yep.
You know, beef, he loves
mm-hmm.
it. So I treated myself. I kind of had a little bit of a craving, and I had a black and blue crusted filet.
Oh, black and blue?
Black
so
and blue.
So it had some peppercorn?
Yep.
And some blue cheese?
Blue cheese
right.
and caramelized onions.
Yum.
And it was like all baked on the top. Like,
oh,
you know, it was
nice.
Like crusty. Oh, it was really good.
So I wonder how they do that. They, you know, typically you finish off a filet, you know, in the oven in a cast iron pan. So maybe they hit it with the broiler
they
just
must
at
have.
The very end
I would think
to get
at the end,
it crispy
the,
like that.
That blue cheese was nice and crusted right
yeah.
on the top. Oh, my.
See, blue cheese is not my favorite cheese.
Really?
No.
It never used to be mine.
Or
I
Stilton.
Never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have like this thing for it. I
really?
Love it. Love it, love it. I used to, yeah, no, I never used to like it. But now I do, I like
do
it.
Do you have a favorite cheese? Is that it?
I like brie.
Yes.
I do like brie. You know, we do, we haven't done it for a little while, but we would go around to different places and get the charcuterie board.
Yes.
You know, like different
uh-huh.
cheeses. And mm-hmm. that's how I got introduced to figs. It was at
oh.
La Belle Winery. Have you ever had their charcuterie?
I have not.
You and Barb have to go.
Really?
Go like on a Saturday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
sit into their,
yeah.
you know, the bar area. It's so pretty over there.
And they have the patio, too, the
and
outdoor.
They have the patio outside.
Outdoor patio.
Yep. Glass yeah. of wine, charcuterie board is delicious over there.
Now, is that too much for two people? Or?
No, it's perfect. We'll go and have that for lunch.
Is that right?
Yeah. Delicious.
Oh, man.
Very, very good.
You guys know how to live. Corks is good also if you want to
Corks
try different types
very
of cheese
good.
At Bedford Village Inn. It's
Corks
their little wine bar and,
yep.
and cheese.
I like it there too.
And all that stuff. Yep. Well, there's some very good, yummy places to eat. And, well, we'll just have to save the rest for tomorrow, I guess.
We do. And, yeah, we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Michael Simon from the Chew Food Network
tomorrow.
Be our guest
be
at 1 o'clock. See you then.
Awesome. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye.